We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government.
I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Monday, July 29th, and what has been happening on Mondays lately, especially when I hope everyone has their bingo cards for the fall of the Republic. I know my family and I do. I was talking to my cousins over the weekend, and one of my cousins said, should we just put Ezekiel 38 like as the free space on the bingo card? Because, I mean, everything that is in the news is just trending toward the trajectory of not only the fall of the Republic, but ultimately the end of all things. And for Christians, at least we can have hope, and we should have hope, that we know the ending, that God wins. And that is a great thing. But for Mondays, I'm always looking at this thinking, wow, we took 2 days off, which I always appreciate the weekends so much. And we all need to have rest from our work and especially from politics. But then it means that Monday, there are just so many things going on. So let's tackle a couple of them, at least in this opening segment. Just moments ago, President Joe Biden, or someone, of course, that is writing for him and writes his op-eds, because you know he's not sitting there at his beach house in Delaware with his quill pen, you know, writing for the Washington Post. But in an op-ed that dropped this morning, he is calling for major changes to the Supreme Court, including a constitutional amendment that would limit immunity for presidents, impose term limits for justices, and stipulate an enforceable code of ethics. So he or his handler, whoever is actually the shadow writer here, says no one is above the law, not the president of the United States, not a justice on the Supreme Court, the United States, no one. But what law are they actually referring to? Because we've heard for years, and of course throughout President Trump's first term, about the Democrats saying that no one is above the law and the justices are contravening the Constitution. But they're not actually pointing to what law they mean or what provision in the U.S. Constitution. They just say that because we as conservatives, those of us who still understand that America is a nation of rules, not a nation of rulers, we understand what the law is, how it governs a moral and upright society, and how we are subject to it. And ultimately, as Christians, we understand that God is the divine lawgiver and how the moral truth of God doesn't change. And so they appeal linguistically to this idea that no one is above the law, but they never point to the specific provisions. They never actually explain why. They don't even really talk about why they are so upset about the Supreme Court's presidential immunity decision, other than, oh no, we can't get Trump in the ways that we want. And that's really it, right? They want the outcomes that they prefer, regardless of how they actually have to manipulate the law. So they're calling for an amendment, wide sweeping changes. Chuck Schumer, in fact, was talking about how his claim is that the Supreme Court, quote, threatens democracy. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. This is literally the one court that is required on the federal level under the U.S. Constitution. It is a creature of the Constitution itself. And then all such inferior courts are subject to Congress and the Judiciary Act. And that's how we get to the circuit courts. That's how we can add different things, federal judges, all of that, that are nominated by a sitting president, have to be confirmed by the Senate. But all of those inferior courts are not creatures specifically of the Constitution. The Constitution provides for how they're created, but we can't ever not have a U.S. Supreme Court. That's part of the Constitution, unless we go back in and totally amend Article 3. But the whole point here is that they're claiming no one is above the law. The Supreme Court threatens democracy. They don't even know what democracy is. Democracy to them, saying democracy is on the ballot. They're the party that just substituted their own candidate for someone who hasn't won a single delegate through a primary or caucus process, and they're claiming that Kamala Harris represents democracy. I mean, these are people that are so hypocritical, and yet we continue to argue on their terms, because the terms that they're using, we understand. And so they're subjecting us to what we understand and manipulating it to advance their own cause. It's the same thing, as like I always say, with people who don't believe in God or know that God exists but hate him, who say, well, you can't do that because, you know, you can't post this on social media because you're just so hateful as a Christian, or, you know, would God want you to do this? And they try to hold you to a standard that they don't even believe in. And so it's always funny to me where I say, you know, the best and most ironic thing on social media is that someone who is holding me to a standard of the God that they don't even believe in. And the purpose of that is not because they actually believe in the standard. It's because they know that I do. And so they're wanting to shut me up or say, go along with my propositions and my policy analysis and my goals because I'm holding you to a standard that you believe in, but I'm going to manipulate the terms and I'm not going to represent it accurately. That's what's going on here. And so in the response to this, it's not just, you know, we don't want Supreme Court reform, or, you know, we're pushing back against the merit of this. We need to go back and say the Democrats don't even believe in the left, doesn't even believe in the rule of law. They don't believe that the U.S. Constitution actually governs America. And largely we are becoming a nation of rulers instead of a nation of rules, which is really alarming. And we're going to be talking about that over the hour today and the entire scope of how the West is falling to Marxism. And we can see that implicit in a lot of things, not just here in America, but abroad as well. But the bottom line is they don't actually believe in the rule of law, because the Supreme Court is just a vehicle to the outcome that they prefer. And so they will tell us that it's super precedent and you can't touch it, and it's cemented in the rule of law when it's Roe versus Wade and the outcome that they prefer. But as soon as a presidential immunity decision that means that they can't achieve their ultimate goal, which is to get Trump, then now they're proposing all of these, you know, wild, ridiculous propositions that they say is to, quote unquote, preserve democracy, when really it's just a mechanism to advance their despotism and their tyranny and their totalitarianism through the vehicle of linguistics that we understand. So don't let them get away with it. And we know that, you know, Biden didn't even write this op-ed anyway, but this is more of a vehicle for the left to argue all of those points. Another headline this morning: be praying for Israel. Hezbollah terrorists have launched a rocket attack on northern Israel, injuring 30 and killing 11 children. This was just such a tragic thing to read. So from Town Hall this morning: Israel is facing another quote unquote all out war after Hezbollah reportedly after Hezbollah terrorists reportedly fired a rocket at Israel and this Arab village, where at least 10 people were killed, including children. That's now gone up to 11. However, Hezbollah has denied the allegations, saying, quote, it had no connection to the incident at all, and categorically denies all false allegations. So a rocket hit a field where children ages 10 to 12 were playing soccer, resulting in fatal wounds. Israel's foreign minister said that the death toll is expected to rise as 30 people were taken to nearby hospitals for their injuries. And this coming as as Erdogan out of Turkey is threatening to invade Israel, which may just be some saber rattling there. But, you know, but the Middle East, there is a lot going on there. We're always really happy when Jill Rosenberg comes on and comments, and we'll have more on this this week. But be praying for Israel. And again, as Christians, this is not a matter of supporting Israel either because we're Israel first as Americans. No, my allegiance is to my country, but my country also has allies. But even more than that, first and foremost, my allegiance is to God and the truth that I understand from theology in the Bible. And when you look at the promises and the covenants of God that he swears by his own name, these are unilateral. It's not, some of them are conditional, of course, like if this, then that, right? But the covenant, when God says, I will make you a great nation to Israel, I will give you this land, and reiterates that covenant multiple times through the text, the land belongs to Israel. And so in this moment of understanding what Israel, not just from the horrific terror attack from last year and the rules of engagement, rules of war, all of those things, but from a covenantal perspective, the Abrahamic covenant in the Bible says that God gave that land to the nation of Israel. And that covenant has not been rescinded. There is nothing in the Bible that says that just because, you know, Israel was not a nation for a while, that somehow now, oh, well, you know, too bad. I guess God's covenant doesn't persist because Israel isn't a nation. Well, no. This is where people, you know, pre, 1947, didn't really understand, said, well, you know, what is God going to do? But we always can be certain that God will fulfill his covenant. He will fulfill his promises. And this is the primary reason that I support Israel as a Christian. And as an American, I also support Israel. And it is not a conflict between being an American first or America first, however, you know, you define that in terms of foreign policy, but also because, I understand that as an American, we need to have allies, and that really, really matters. So what about Kamala Harris? So Barack and Michelle Obama endorsed Kamala Harris over or Kamala or Kamala, as some of us call her. And there was a really just cringe video. This is another thing that's on our bingo card. Kamala Harris is more and more cringe. That actually should be the free space on bingo, because that's just a guarantee that Kamala is always really cringe. But I think that we need to not underestimate her as a conservative base and as conservatives. Yes, she is cringe, but realize, again, the Democrats and the left do not think like us. They don't think of, or I don't think even really care, whether it's Kamala Harris or it's Joe Biden, who is their candidate for a while, who could barely string a sentence together, unless apparently he's writing for the Washington Post. But they don't care. Fundamentally, she has gained so much momentum, not because of the enthusiasm for her as a candidate, but because of their enthusiasm to achieve their ultimate goal, which is the total reinvention of America and the destruction of Western civilization. That's what Kamala Harris stands for. And they don't care whether we call her a border czar, whether, you know, we say, oh, she cackles too much, whether, you know, all of these top line things, and the way that I'm seeing the Trump campaign respond and the lines of attack, I think are so surface level. They're not really getting down to the heart of the issue. And what, in my, just my opinion, having worked for the Trump campaign in 2020, you know, seeing all of this and kind of being internal to that kind of messaging, the strategy and all this, it seems like a replay of 2020 with Basement Biden and all of those things. And for the independents and moderates, and especially women that really need to be convinced that Kamala Harris is not the candidate that should represent America and should have the office of the president, this needs to be fundamentally about her worldview. Because if this is just about identity politics or calling her a border czar, you know, any of these things that nobody other than some, you know, really hardcore politicos even knows what that means or even cares. I mean, I don't even really care. Okay, so they call her a border czar, and yes, the border's a disaster, but that's an issue. But it doesn't get to the heart fundamentally of her worldview and how she's a trained Marxist. And her goal and the left, the progressive extreme left, their goal for America is to completely tear down Western civilization and our rule of law. Going all the way back to the beginning of this segment, this is about what they say threatens democracy when they really are the threats to the Republic based on their worldview. We're going to talk about that more when we come right back here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 will underwrite ultrasounds for an entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And if you did not watch the Olympics over the weekend, you are one of now millions that are boycotting the Olympics because of the opening ceremonies that took place in Paris on Friday. And of course, the live event happened hours before prime time here in the United States. And it was very interesting to see the immediate backlash on the opening ceremony, which was just a disgusting, satanic, demonic display of not only a drag show and overt sexualized content, but a specific mockery of Christianity through a drag performance and staging of a recreation of Da Vinci's famous painting, The Last Supper. And there have been some online controversy saying that, well, because a little bit after this scene, then there's like this giant like cloche that you would see on a dinner dish that opens, and this really weird looking, you know, blue suited man that has a bunch of, you know, flowers and stuff over him comes out and is supposed to represent the festival of Dionysus and this the Greek god Dionysus, which of course has no place at the Last Supper and that historical event or that representation through the painting. And so a lot of the backlash against those who were outraged rightly by this mockery of Christianity said, well, what are you complaining about? You just read into the symbolism here. This was supposed to be the Feast of Dionysus. And yet what the Paris Olympics have admitted and has apologized for now, and we'll get to their apology in a second, which isn't really an apology. What this was called in French was the Last Supper by the river. Is a loose translation of what this was called in French. And it was very clearly meant to evoke that symbolism. And the person of Jesus in that depiction was replaced with a morbidly obese woman wearing a crown. And then her apostles around the table were queer and drag figures. And so this has sparked a lot of criticism from world nations around the globe. I mean, even the nation of Iran, some in Iran are saying, you know, this is just a horrible mockery of Christianity. And I'm thinking, okay, when Iran thinks you've gone too far, then, you know, you've this is just really, really bad. But there have been Catholics, Christians, Protestants. Al Mohler had a very strong statement. Even Andy Stanley had a very strong statement. You know, rarely do I agree with a lot of, you know, his commentary or theology these days, but he had commentary, Franklin Graham. And so the Paris Olympics have now apologized for this, but it was more of a, well, I'm sorry if this offended you, which if you've ever had, you know, a parent, a spouse, or a friend say, well, I'm sorry if you feel that way. That's not really an apology. That's basically saying, sorry, Snowflake, that you're raising this issue, but, you know, whatever, let's move on. It's not actually genuinely saying we should not have done that. And so the creator and the creative director of this, Thomas Jolly is his name, has gotten a lot of attention since this event. And I want to welcome in our special guest this morning, Michael O'Fallon, who is almost as controversial as a figure as I am. So congrats for that, Michael O'Fallon. He is the founder of Sovereign Nations and one of the most brilliant orators and educators, I think, on the rise and fall of the West and how cultural Marxism is really just taking over and where we are headed as a country. So I want to start first with the Olympics. And, you know, this was not just a satirical mocking that was unintended. I mean, I think that this was specifically intended to show how on that national of a stage, that Christianity is not only derided, but specifically saying this type of pagan demonic influence is taking over the West, and we are going to specifically show that we hate God.
Yes, and I think that if you think back to like the 1984 Olympics and the 88 Olympics, and, you know, even what was happening in nations like Greece or Spain, is that the nations would put their best foot forward on who they are in terms of the national identity. And so all of a sudden you have France who comes up to the plate, and what they do is they basically bring drag queen story hour to your living room. And so, you know, you're looking at this mess, and it started off, of course, with the scenes from the Bastille, and the Bastille and the storming of the Bastille is basically what began the French Revolution. And you have a headless Marie Antoinette, who is then, they pan back, and then fire leaps up from the bottom of the Bastille with a heavy metal rock band playing, and basically trying to bring this idea of horror and terror. So what they're doing as they go into the boat scene, where you have the depiction of Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper, is you have this kind of out with the old and in with the new, out with the old ideas that you had and bringing in the new, this kind of trans, if you will, this transformation into the new Christianity or whatever cult that they actually want to forward. Now, let's think about this for a second. Where did this take place? Well, it took place on the Seine River. And the Seine River runs through Paris. But what's on one side of the river? One side of the river, you have Notre Dame, which was burned down in 2019. On the other side of the river, you have basically the road that leads up to the Parthenon, or the Pantheon, I should say, the Pantheon, which is where Rousseau is buried. And along the way there, you actually have the place, the Sorbonne, where you would have John Calvin study. You know, almost 500 years ago, you would have as well, that's where communist folks like Pol Pot studied as well. But this is all happening on the river in between these two places. And so when you look at this, you can't just look at the scene itself, but you have to think about where it took place. Remember as well that the Seine goes past the Eiffel Tower. And at the base of the Eiffel Tower is where hundreds of French Huguenots were actually buried after the massacre that occurred on Valentine's Day many, many years ago.
Well, and Michael O'Fallon, you know, there the Paris Olympics would like us to believe that, oh, none of that was intended. You're just reading so much into that. This was all about diversity and inclusion. But when you say, you know, this is what we, the past needs to be left behind and into the new future, that reminds me eerily of Kamala Harris's famous word salad. Now, to be unburdened by what has been and, you know, going ahead to what may be, which I think is actually the point.
Right. And what you basically have is the alchemical creation of the new. And the thing that, of course, that we, those of us that love our freedom, that love our liberty, people in France that really want to stay French, they don't want to be transformed into this new thing. And so in the transformation of going into what is obviously, you know, a complete, you know, moving away from the real into the surreal or in a simulacra of the real. And so when you're looking at that whole scene that took place that everybody's focusing on, is that everything there was the opposite of what is real. When we take a look at the Lord's Supper, when we take a look at a man, when we take a look at a woman, if everything is the opposite of what was real, then you're really looking at Gnosticism in plain and simple terms.
Wow. And how did, I mean, if there are so many of the French people that I think, like America, don't want to be transformed into this whole, you know, queer theory, Marxist, trans notion of the leftist utopia, then how do you get somebody like a Thomas Jolly that can do all of this and nobody sat there and said, you know, well, wait a minute, maybe this isn't a good thing to put on such a huge, giant world stage, or is that part intentional as well?
Oh, absolutely, it's intentional. Thomas Jolly is well known in France for his let's say, avant-garde creativity and so forth. So when you put him in charge and you start to stage all these things, you know, this kind of production that took place last Friday, I think it was, when you look at that size of production, thousands of people know what's going to occur. And as well, the Olympic officials know what's going to occur. So when you're actually going for shock, when you're going for something that is offensive and so forth, the entire Olympic Committee understood what was going to happen with the opening ceremonies. And where people were looking for, I mean, even if you had a replay of the Moulin Rouge, it would be less offensive than what occurred there on the boat that day. And so when you look at this, yes, they are going for a complete push away from the normal, push away from the traditional, push away from what things you value, and they're trying to shock you to have a response. And the response, of course, has been, I think, universally by almost everyone, is that this was something that was meant to offend necessarily. So that was their intention. Their intention was to offend you. Their goal was, of course, to basically put forward something that you would be revulsed by, something you would look at and go, oh my gosh, that's horrible. And the reason is because they're trying to soften you up to bring you into a new beginning.
I'm speaking with Michael O'Fallon, who's the founder of Sovereign Nations. You can go to sovereignnations.com and see all of the events and articles and videos and just great content that is there. And yet when we do respond, you know, we being the normal people who want to live in actual reality, not this, you know, transverse that they want us to, then the response to that from Thomas Jolly from the Paris Fest, oh, no, we didn't intend that. And, oh, you snowflakes, how dare you be outraged? Can't we just, you know, all get along? I saw one social media commentator who just, bless his heart, I'll say that even though I'm not currently in Tupelo, Mississippi, but I'll just say that so that I can say something, yes, I don't say something else.
Yeah.
But he actually responded and said, well, this is just French. I mean, and look at how, you know, this ship has sailed on things like, you know, nudity and overt sexuality, you know, years and years ago, and was actually comparing this to Michelangelo and the Sistine Chapel and like and the Statue of David. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This is nothing like the Renaissance. I mean, I feel like we have just completely lost the understanding of culture and art and what symbolism means in all of these people who are responding, going, well, you know, no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you think back to what actually happened with with the French, and with what they did is they would basically try to measure everything in terms of to an ideal. So when you look at art, let's say, is that they would say there is a measurement to art of how we know that it is great art, or how we know a restaurant serves great food. That's where you have the Michelin guide and so forth. But what they would do is all of a sudden you transition into this new period where all of a sudden what is put forward by the French for art is a urinal. And this was, what, I think 80, 90 years ago. And so that is art, is a urinal. So all of a sudden you're going into the postmodern. You're going into something that has no measurement of how it actually has some sort of ability to see what is good and what is not good. Now you're going into the shock period. And so the French have transitioned in some ways, but they've been pushed into this, and it's by Marxist concepts. So in the Marxist world, in the critical theory world, is what you're going to do is you're going to approach everything with a critical consciousness. You're going to put to death the old and then resurrect the new. And in essence, that's what's actually happened in Paris. And so, you know, while there is still, look, people that come to Paris for vacation, let's say, or to tour, they look at the things that have great standards, that, you know, they go to the Louvre, they go to see all the sites in Paris because that represents the best that humanity can do. Well, now what they're doing is they're tearing that down piece from piece. And as well, when you take a look at what's happening in terms of your understanding of Catholicism and your concern of Christianity, is you're looking at Christianity in a way that approaches it in the same vein, is you're looking at how can I tear this down and resurrect the new? And that's what actually you saw on Friday in the Olympics.
Wow. And I'm speaking with Michael O'Fallon, who is the founder of Sovereign Nations. You can go to sovereignnations.com. Also follow him on X and on social media. And, you know, and this whole tearing down of the old, and you mentioned, you know, these standards of how do we appreciate art and beauty and, you know, some of these things that aren't necessarily strictly confined to policy. I mean, this is where I think conservatives as a whole, because we are so focused just on logic and argumentation and all this, kind of have lost appreciation of those standards and maybe aren't even applying them in some ways to the culture and understanding just how important it is to see these very overt and obvious signals and communication from the arts. And this is where, you know, Nancy Piercy's book, Saving Leonardo, for the audience, I would highly recommend it because it goes back through, you know, what was the culture considering and what philosophy was at the fore of the day. And you can see that represented in art and how art and culture can tell us a lot about our society and what philosophy we're subscribing to. And so this type of overt, trans, just disgusting display is on purpose supposed to represent not only a specific mockery of Christianity and a hatred for the truth, but this whole idea of queer theory, where there is no such thing as a man or a woman. There's you can reinvent yourself in any way that you want, and the apostles of Christ are the ones who are the drag queens. I mean, that is specific imagery that is trying to tell a specific philosophy and a specific story. We're going to have to take a break here, and I want to tie this all into where we're at in politics in the next segment with our special guest, Michael O'Fallon. So stay with us here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are talking about the controversy surrounding the Olympic opening ceremony Friday night in Paris, France. And if you think that that kind of just vulgar, outright, overtly sexual, demonic, pagan display in prime time, you know, it's just French, it's vulgar, whatever. But, you know, here in America, we still stand for what is right and good and pure and lovely. Well, it's already come to our shores, and we've seen that in the vulgar pagan displays on the South Lawn of the White House, for example. We've seen that in parades across the United States in drag queen story time, and how they're the left is continually trying the exact same type of shock value here in the U.S. for the purpose of transforming the culture, as my special guest Michael O'Fallon very wisely said, and he's the founder of Sovereign Nations. You can go to sovereignnations.com. And so this is not just an issue, Mike, of the of Paris and of, you know, of Europe going more extreme left and maybe, you know, 10 or 15 years further along down that road than America. This is overall about a huge push globally for not only globalism, but also Marxist theory, and ultimately what's rooted in Luciferian paganism, which is this whole idea that we can be God. That was the original sin in the garden. And so, and that's really the push ultimately for these people, is that we can reinvent not only ourselves, but our own reality, and we too can be God. And we are seeing that now on the national political stage with the Democrats' presumptive nominee, Kamala Harris. And so let's talk about that and her candidacy, because I think that that needs to be the line of attack from the Trump campaign. I mean, yeah, you know, borders are like whatever, you know, what really is the most clear and present danger of Kamala Harris is her Marxist training. I mean, her father was a Marxist professor.
Yes, Donald Harris. And so what you're looking at with Kamala Harris or the entire Biden administration is you're looking at the will and the concepts that organizations like the World Economic Forum, the United Nations, the Five Eyes Nations, and so forth want to put forward as the new world, as the new order, if you will. It's curious to note that nations like Brazil, India, China, et cetera, that make up BRICS are not going this direction, but the entire West is. So when you look at a figure like Kamala Harris, who you know, basically represents this transformative change into a new way of doing things or new way of thinking, you're looking at the will and the thoughts of where the West wants to go by basically joining in with these concepts of equity and joining in these concepts of basically having a trans society. And what I mean by that is that you're trying to transform society into something that is exactly the opposite of what we were just like 60 years ago, let's say. If we go back to the 1960s, everything that is happening now would be shocking and offensive and must be defeated. But it's the thing that we're being told is what is inclusive. So when you look at the Biden administration, and we can just call it now the Harris administration, is you're looking at an opportunity to come in to the presidency, into the executive branch, and change everything that was about America. You look at hiring someone like Pete Buttigieg as the Secretary of Transportation, who says by 2030, we want to have net zero automobile deaths in America. Well, how do you achieve that? It's not humanly possible. Well, you're right. It isn't humanly possible. So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have to basically make sure that nobody drives anymore, that the way of getting from one place to another is by actually surrendering your ability to have liberty, and you're putting it in the hands of something that is artificial in intelligence. If you're looking at how human sexuality is to be understood, you're looking at basically having a complete smorgasbord of new ways of thinking about human sexuality. So when you look at Harris and you look at what she's trying to bring in, what she's trying to bring in is a complete change in terms of our economic abilities. When you take a look at the Green New Deal, you're looking at bringing in a system that is like distributism, if you will. The way that we look at things in terms of stakeholder capitalism as opposed to shareholder capitalism, where people are able to make money by taking a chance or investing in something or by the sweat of their brow. And then as opposed to that, you're bringing in equity, which means that we all have equal outcomes. That's a complete transformation out of what America was into the America that they want it to be.
Right. And this is such a manipulative way of using the idea of American individualism against us and reinventing that yeah. term to mean diversity, which ultimately is a progression toward communism. Because I was reminded when we were talking about the Olympic ceremony, contrasting that to Beijing in 2008, which interestingly was the same year as the rise of Barack Obama, and how that entire ceremony, you saw the synchronized flatness of collectivism, because you saw, you know, the Chinese, they were all totally synchronized. There was not in, you know, one of the bigger displays that everybody talked about, you know, were all of these drummers that just for an entire vastness on the stage were completely synchronized. And it looked like, you know, the marches of Mao. I mean, it looked like what communist collectivism is, that nobody is different. Everybody is the same. They're all creatures of the state. But and that in the East compared to what we're seeing with the fall of the West, and how we're taking this, or the left is taking this idea of individualism, but they're actually trying to push a diversity that ends up getting to the very same thing as the East.
Right. Yeah. So basically what you see is that China is together in terms of their ethnic identity, in terms of their way of doing things as a Chinese people. And what they're trying to do is fracture the West. So if you shatter the West to bits, let's say like the United States, you do that by basically breaking what would be considered the hegemony or the way that we do things. That's Gramsci's terms, of course. But if you balkanize America, if you fracture America into identity groups by using identity politics, then we're no longer together. You know, Jenna, I mean, we're not unified to be able to say that we just want the best for all of us, right? It doesn't matter if you're black, you're white, you're Asian, you're Latino. It doesn't matter what your religion is here, but we want the best. And so we're trying to create an avenue of opportunity in America, whereas in China, yes, they are all working for the best in terms of a collective identity as opposed to an individual identity in the United States, but with a collective purpose of let's just make it the best. And so when you start to take that away and you break something up, basically you're not going to be able to have a unified United States anymore. You're going to have a United States that is no longer united. It's going to be the divided states of America. And so how you do that, of course, is by breaking apart those things that we all know unify us together.
Yeah, and there was actually a piece in the Wall Street Journal, and that was just even earlier this morning, and I sent it to you, Mike, you know, just moments before the program, but yeah. Just right in line with this, the headline is America's New Political War Pits Young Men Against Young Women. And so we're seeing this play out even with what I think honestly was a disastrous pick of Donald Trump with J.D. Vance for a lot of reasons, but seeing how that choice has been exploited by the left, specifically to say that, you know, this is we want to get rid of, or and we don't care even about appealing to the young or old white male. This is all about diversity, and to see that contrast, I mean, I think that it is very clear that this new political war is pitting young men against women.
Yeah, and, you know, first of all, I love Donald Trump. I will vote for Donald Trump. But Donald Trump now is 0-2 on VP picks. Just like when he picked Pence to be able to be his vice president, what was the influence of Pence? Well, Pence, you would say, is heading up the coronavirus task force. And he also is the person who came to Donald Trump and suggested that his surgeon general be Jerome Adams. Jerome Adams is a Marxist. He actually is for something called health equity, which is the opposite of what you should want. It's the kind of plan that Kamala Harris would want. So now you take a look and you see J.D. Vance. Well, what does J.D. Vance represent? Well, first of all, we know that he's been a partner with Peter Thiel for years. Peter Thiel believes in the singularity. And the singularity is basically a merge of both human and machine, if you will, artificial intelligence, et cetera. So these are concepts that come from Thiers Desjardins, who was a French Jesuit priest who basically came up with these ideas of human evolution, basically New Age concepts and so forth. And so these are concepts that are the same things that the World Economic Forum is for. So all of a sudden you have a Republican candidate who is calling himself basically in line with Christian nationalism, who is looking at bringing in a strongman dictator, if you will, a Franco or a Red Caesar. And you're going to start to say things to the population like, well, you know, there needs to be a higher tax burden on people that are single because they don't have a future invested, you know, in terms of what they want to have for America. So if you're single and you don't have children, all of a sudden you're going to be penalized under his system if he were to get in. That's not what Donald Trump would say, but that's what J.D. Vance has said in the past, because his ideas basically, they are the same ideas that came out of a place called Claremont, and that's an organization. Same things that would come from a guy by the name of Charles Haywood. So all of a sudden you're looking at things that really start to sound like fourth political theory from Alexander Dugin, as opposed to things that align with the Constitution of the United States.
And there was even along those same lines, there was another piece in the Wall Street Journal just this morning at 5 a.m. And the headline is Why J.D. Vance Worries About Childlessness. And this has become a rallying cry for those on the left because they're poking fun at J.D. Vance and also accusing him, of course, of being, you know, this misogynistic, chauvinistic, you know, type that he's saying, well, the unhappy childless cat ladies, you know, don't contribute anything to society. And we would, as Christians, think, well, you know, he's just pointing out the fact that the left doesn't value traditional family, doesn't value marriage, children, all that. But I think what you're pointing out is something very different about why he's using those specific phrases.
Yeah. And you just think about it for a second, is that all of a sudden, someone that doesn't have children, whether it be because, you know, they had, you know, issues in terms of the reproductive organs, or they chose not to use IVF, which is something that his side is very much against as well. Well, you can't condemn everybody, and that wouldn't be something that you would do in the United States of America because of their status of children or not. Or you wouldn't actually start to suggest that, you know, we need to take a look at new economic systems that maybe can work better in our current environment, where you're talking about bringing in things like distributism. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the same thing that the World Economic Forum is for. That's the same thing that actually Kamala Harris is for. So why would you start to bring in somebody that is basically taking down the concept of capitalism, who's talking about penalizing people because of their station in life? That's not American. That's something that someone that would be like a fascist dictator would do. So we have to look at how can we start to move back towards a constitutional republic where we all have individual rights, as opposed to having somebody like Mr. Vance put us into a collective understanding of things. We don't want that, Jenna. That's the last thing that we would want in America. That's something that the left would do, but now the right is actually for. So I don't think that Donald Trump, if he were to sit down and look at these facts, would go, okay, that's a good decision. But I think people around him have told him this is the way to go.
Right. And this is where, you know, like many other decisions in the past of Trump, I mean, I think he is very pro capitalist. I think he's very pro the American ideal in a lot of ways, in a lot of very good ways. But there are people around him and people he chooses to have around him that he doesn't necessarily see the deeper implications of some of these ideas. And so do you think, and I know that I'm going to get a lot of listeners who are saying, why doesn't anybody tell him? Can you forward this program on to Trump and his advisors? The problem, of course, are the people around him and the advisors around him. And so in just the last like minute we have here, and this is going to be an ongoing conversation, you know, what ultimately then becomes the possibility of a solution if we do get a second Trump term, which would be markedly better than Kamala Harris, as you mentioned?
Well, I think what we do have to do is we have to speak up. I know that we all want to see this current administration out and another Trump administration in. But we do have to understand that the seeds for what would be the Biden administration were planted by people that were in the Trump administration. So, you know, you can't end up where we are right now without a Steve Mnuchin. You can't end up where we are now without a Department of Homeland Security that actually allows for things to happen like they did in May and June and July of 2020. So we have to still speak up and say, Mr. President, we need to have better people. We need to have people that represent the values of the American people, and especially those that have voted you in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Well, Mike O'Fallon, so appreciate your time and your explanations this morning. And, you know, to everyone listening, we have to pray for this country. We have to pray that we get back to biblical values and the truth about our Judeo-Christian heritage. And we'll continue to talk about this more, not just be, you know, Republican versus Democrat and some of these top line issues. We have to always get back to the worldview and contrast that with biblical truth. You can always reach me and my team at Jenna@AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.